Operator, give me the number for 911.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
It's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a gold dry. The interest is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see, my woman and the kids and the dogs and me. Got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch catfish from dusk till dawn. Make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't too many things these old boys can't do. We grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Because you can't starve us out and you can't make us run. Those women old boys raised on shotguns. From the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the western skies. And we can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. My grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures of the Broadway nights, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beach nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. North California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land. We can skin a buck and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
Thank you. game is going on in here? What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Burn out on the whole global warming deal. They're going to charge you taxes on CO2, so it's going to cost you to breathe regardless of what you say or do about it. I'm just going to humor them. Now, I got to say it. When the tax bills start rolling in for your carbon tax and all that, because, you know, they did say that cows are putting methane, which is another greenhouse gas, up into the air. I'm going into cork business because there's a lot of cows out there. And so you're going to have to put a cork in this way and you got to put a cork in that way in order to keep that cow from farting and burping, because otherwise you're going to cause global warming to happen so fast you know, with all them cows farting. Either way, you know, the terrorists, they could probably, like, go around and feed all the cows beans. And the people, for that matter, three bean chili. I mean, just think about it. If everybody's eating three bean chili and the cows are eating three bean chili, first off, don't stand behind the cow if there's a cork in this way, because if that cow decides he's going to sling some beans, you're liable to get an eye put out. You know, the thing about it is, if there was enough methane reaching from that cow's butt clear up to the Earth's atmosphere, the first time you went out there and lit up a smoke, we'd have some serious problems. You want to talk about global warming? Methane's flammable. I wonder if they figured that one out. Like I said before, man, I'm just gonna humor the global warming freaks and let them have it. Wait for my day in court and all that kind of stuff. That's about all I got to say on that episode. So, y'all take it out how you want. I'm going into cork business, so if y'all need any corks for your cows, you know, they're going to be pretty good-sized corks. So, just don't stand behind them in case there's any gas buildup or anything like that, because I'd hate to have you get knocked out. You know, I'm going to have a disclaimer on there that says if you get hit in the face with a cork, hey, I'm not liable. It's better than blowing up if you had to light up a smoke, you know, with all them beans flying everywhere. Well, y'all take care. Peace. Good luck with that global warming. Yeah, before I take off, I got to say this. I had a eureka moment, and I got this theory on how the dinosaurs died. Okay, now picture this. Picture yourself in an elevator and some scumbag comes up in that elevator and the door shuts and you're riding up and you're in between floors and turkey next to you rips one out, you know, and your eyes start watering, you're about to gag and you're ready to roll up out that elevator. Well, I was thinking about that. Now think about a dinosaur. They were huge, man. Imagine how much freaking gas comes out of a dinosaur's ass. Alright, I can see it now. This is exactly how it played out, right? Dinosaur's over there, and he's grazing and everything, you know, and caveman's over there by his cave, and he's getting ready to try to light up a fire because nighttime's coming, and he's figuring, you know, I gotta get this fire lit because it's gonna get cold out here. Well, long comes old T-Rex, starts chasing the dinosaur that's just now sitting there trying to graze, mind his own farewell. You know, suddenly that scares the living you-know-what out of the dinosaur, and he rips one loose, man, just about the time that caveman's over there, he's rubbing his sticks together and stuff, and all of a sudden a spark hits that cloud of methane, and boom! Every damn dinosaur on the planet just gone. It's just a theory. Alright, well, enough of that nonsense. I ain't messing with the global warming freaks anymore, you know, because they just get on my nerves anyway, because no matter what you say to them, their science is better than your science, and you don't know nothing. Alright, got to get that carbon tax passed. Hey, that's what it's all about. Money. Woo! We green people got to have money. Alright, peace, everybody.
Everybody, you're listening to Shazoo's Mad Science. I got Raymond on the other end there. I put a link down there in the Shazoo's radio chat room there about the Daily Mail did one on how Mars was warmer than 14 states here in the United States. So I played that old video there of the caveman killed the dinosaur because I've been yelling about the whole so-called global warming sham for ever and a day. Now, you got all these leaders out there, supposed representatives out there that want to push this whole so-called carbon tax, you know, to save the planet, it just makes me, it just hurts my head to even think about it. I mean, here we are. I mean, I did a video some time back called Global Warming Freaks. Anyway, I was shoveling 20 inches of snow off my driveway, and they were still complaining about global warming. And I don't know if any of y'all's noticed outside, but it doesn't necessarily seem to be all that warm. Jacksonville, Florida got a good dusting of snow. California got some snow, and I think it was up in New York, Buffalo, they got 8 feet of snow. And by the time it's all said and done, end up with 9 feet of snow. So I'd like to know whenever these supposed representatives out there are going to get this global warming thing on. You know, I'm burning firewood and found out that there's a deal coming out from the EPA in some of the different states where they're trying to ban the burning of firewood. You can't burn firewood. And they're saying in this one document that you have to literally destroy your old stove if it's not EPA compliant and it's illegal for you to use it. These guys must have lost their mind, Raymond.
Yeah. I think you're 100% right. Holy cow.
I went to my front door, and I was looking out the window. I can't even see out the window. You might want to kill your video so it don't slow you down there.
Oh, I'm sorry about that.
No, I'm sorry. I went to my front door and to look out the window, and the front door, the windows are covered in ice.
Yeah.
I'm like, man, that global warming's a kicking this morning. I couldn't even see out. I had to get me an ice scraper and scrape off the window so I could look outside the door.
Yeah, I think the scientists, not the scientists, I think the politicians and the sky-falling chickens are running around talking about stuff they don't even realize. They have no idea what they're talking about. For example, back in the 1600s when they had the Little Ice Age, Big Freeze, I mean, we're talking global average temperatures only dropped like 7 degrees. That doesn't mean that it's going to get blistering hot or we're going to have an ice age. Global warming or global heating or cooling off simply means that the average temperature over the years drops. And when it does, climates change. And that's what happened about the big famine. In France, when they had the big French Revolution, killed all those people, royal people, people were starving to death because they didn't know the things we know today, that the temperature worldwide does rise and fall slightly, and a 7-degree temperature changes climate conditions as far as growing crops, where people were trying to grow wheat, and wheat couldn't stand the weather. If they had gone to a different crop, something that could stand the weather, they've been fine. Well, we've got global warming. That means that over the years, the average temperature is going to warm up. So there's going to be some crops that we're not going to be able to grow in certain areas of the world.
And I don't know if you ever had the opportunity to go back and see my video, Earth Tilted, but I put this video out about a year or so back. I can't remember exactly. I think it was 2011. Maybe it was longer than a year or so. But either way, I put this video out talking about how the Earth had tilted to some degree. And you can clearly see it whenever you go out and watch where your sun normally rose. You get used to knowing where the sun's coming up every morning. Anyway, I started noticing that it was coming up slightly different than what it was, and I actually built a sun tracker to keep an eye on where it was tracking across, you know, when it come up in the east. You know, like the Boy Scout manual says, the sun rises in the east and sets in the west. Now, we obviously know there's some sort of deviation there, a little bit to the right or left, because of the wobble of the earth, but this was more extreme and noticeable. And so I started tracking it, and it began to come up in the southeast and go down in the southwest. And then the next day it might come up in the northeast and go down over in the northwest. So it told me that the not only the wobble had increased, that we were tilted more than I actually thought we were. And that changed the weather from top to bottom. But if you go back and look at that video, you'll hear me say in that video that there's going to be some major earth changes. There's going to be some things going on because of this. Because if you think about what you just said about how the change in the weather pattern in one area will affect the other side, well, you tilt the earth, part of the equator is not where it used to be anymore, if you know what I mean.
Exactly, exactly. And that's what I'm talking about. Back in the day of the Big Freeze, Little Ice Age, the scientists didn't understand the things that we need to understand today. The problem we got today is politicians and, I don't know how to...
Well, they're stealing from people, Raymond. They're flat out stealing from people with unproven, bogus science. And here it is, we're freezing our booty off. And then they're turning around hollering about how we gotta save the planet from global warming. And then whenever it got cold, wait a second, let's change it to climate change, because now we can't really call it warming, because it's you know, it's cold outside, and everybody's noticing this.
Well, you know, it's the same thing as the Y2K deal at the turn of the century. It exists, and there's ways to handle it, but people are going to get out there, and they're going to try their best to make money out of it. They're going to get everybody scared to death. Oh, my God, we're going to freeze them. Oh, the earth's going to burn up. I mean, come on, folks. All we got to do is take our knowledge. You can't change it. I mean, it's natural. It happens.
Well, Al Gore made a lot of money off of it. He wrote his book, Earth in the Balance. You know, I wouldn't even use that book for firewood, because it'd probably rot my fireplace out. But
yeah, you know, I mean, people just need to learn and prepare. I'm not talking about your prepper of sword, a couple of years worth of food, this, that, that. Prepare. Learn how to handle the cold weather. Learn how to handle the heat. Handling the heat doesn't mean jacking up your electric bill with your air conditioning. It means making your home more efficient.
Yeah, and that's where I wanted to get into the point of the today's show, was the heating portion of it. See, I've been messing around with building homemade generators and such for quite many years. You know, I had my YouTube channel for a long time, put a lot of them older videos up there. And I noticed one thing that was easy to do with voltage was to heat up a tungsten element. You know, I started off doing this in a smaller light bulb, and it's obvious you need a whole lot of, you know, current watts and amps in order to, you know, get a massive amount of heat. You know, like your average space heater, I mean, no, anywhere from 500 watts all the way up to 1500 watts just for a space heater. And so that drains a lot of power. But I figured if you could hit that same element with the right frequency, you can get it to vibrate and create that heat without having to have that much power input. You see where I'm coming from?
So do, and I might say something to the listeners out there. Like the Y2K2 hoax, it existed. These computer chips were flawed. They couldn't go beyond two digits. But the truth, and this is an old saying, the truth shall set you free. So don't be scared of global warming, but don't listen to a bunch of hype either. Learn something about it. The truth, knowledge, will set you free.
Yeah, and my biggest issue of the whole deal since way back when I first started even hearing about the whole global warming sham was the science of the deal. I mean, if a little 9-year-old zit-faced science geek could figure it out, then the guys up there should have known from the get-go man-made global warming was a crock. You know, nature's in charge, and that's all there is to it.
And true, global global warming or global cooling does exist. It's not a hoax. The sham is the way they try to portray it, and so they can prime you up to bilk you out of billions and billions of dollars. It's all money. When these people get on to worldwide television and news conferences and this, that, and other, start talking about this scare and that scare, trying to scare people to prime them so they can empty their pockets. People out there, listen to me, please. The truth and knowledge will set you free. You don't have to fall for all this boom hype. I mean,
I saw an article here just the other day where they're wanting to make it literally illegal to be off the grid, off the power grid. You can't run your own solar, you can't run your own wind, you have to be connected to the power lines. And it's actually started off in Florida where they're trying to do this the most. But, you know, what goes on in one state usually ends up trickling down over the other, and there's a reason behind all that, because there's a lot of tax money that comes out of, energy generations. And, of course, you know, the government needs money in order to function. So they're going to figure out, well, you know, if you're not paying this, then we're not going to have the tax money for us. We can't fix your roads and so on and so forth.
Right.
Well, if the whole global warming thing was the truth, and if there was seriously an issue that needed to be addressed, then they wouldn't be discouraging people for getting off the power grid, because those plants use a lot of coal or natural gas or whatever, you know. And so with that said, they would be out there literally saying, look, you know, this is a serious issue. You know, if you don't have to drive your car, don't drive your car. If you don't have to, you know, burn wood, don't burn wood, because this is fact, and here's all the facts to back it up. But that ain't the case. It's just a case of coming out, hey, hand me your wallet, do what I say, shut up, you know your place and shut your face kind of thing. You know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean.
Well, it's ridiculous, because there's a lot of people out there suffering, and I got, you know, I got an $800 light bill, and that was about several months back before I realized there's a secondary heating element in a heat pump system, and when it gets down below zero, heat pumps are really super inefficient, and so that secondary element will kick on, and it will spin your meter like a helicopter. I mean, I'm surprised the pole didn't come out of the ground. But, so we went and we shut one of them down, and we only had one of them running, only heating half the house at a time, and it still did the same thing. And so we changed up the way we heat our house. Now we got a wood-burning stove that's outside, and we've also used a little space heaters to supplement that. And our bill dropped from $800 down to $400 a month. But, you know, when B.O. was getting in office, he said that your electric bills would necessarily skyrocket under his plan. See? Now, I can't afford $800 a month light bill, and I couldn't afford, you know, necessarily $400 light bill either. But, you know, that under their plan, that's what they're talking about. That whole tax, global warming tax, carbon tax, or whatever. My friend over there in Australia showed me his light bill, $1,700 and some odd for 1 month in a studio apartment. Are you kidding me?
Lord have mercy,
$1,700. And that's under that whole global warming tax thing, you know, the whole carbon tax deal.
You realize that over half the world doesn't make, I mean, people in the world don't make that much money? They don't make enough money to pay a bill like that.
Yeah, and it's nuts, you know. You already have to have two family members out there trying to earn a living, you know. And so now we got our kids running amok, and everybody's hollering about how the kids aren't behaving themselves because they're not really getting the parenting they actually should be getting if they had a real family back in the whole, like, leave it to Beaver days, you know? Dad goes to work, mom takes care of the kids and ships them off to school and so on and so forth, you know, the family unit. Well, You know, we have the technology already. We've had the technology. We still build our house out of sticks, man. Why are we doing that? There's insulation. There's foam insulation that you can put that is like, it'll turn your house into a thermos, more or less. If it's cold inside, it'll stay cold. If it's hot...
And strong enough to stop all kinds of debris during a tornado.
Yeah.
It's like weight, so you just fasten it down stronger. That's all.
So why aren't we as a society helping out even the poor people? See, that's the most thing. Most folks would build them an indestructible house if they were rich enough to do so, but it's not plausible in most communities. But it's not like we don't have the capability to do so. We got the capability to literally build life pod style houses that would float, be tornado proof, like you said, energy efficient to the extreme, self-contained.
Yes. it's like, okay, you heat with your house with electricity, and I heat my house and my office with electricity. The thing is, what about, like you said, the heating coils? Okay, so you run electricity through the heating coil, the resistance causes the coils to get hot, and you blow air across it, and you duct it through the different rooms in the house. Well, what about this? What about put the coils in a metal box and let it heat the metal box?
Yeah.
But then cover the outside of the metal box with thermocouples with heat sinks on.
Yeah.
Put air across that, you get the heat on, the same heat, and heat your house, but you're making electricity to run your refrigerator, your deep freeze, your electric stove, whatever. And you're using the same energy twice.
Well, it's all possible, and that's what I've been saying all along, that, you know, there's things out there, like those little Peltier elements that you heat one side
Peltier device, yes.
Yeah, they'll work off a temperature difference, and they'll generate electricity. There's thermal couples, there's thermal piles that are thermoelectric. There's even, you know, the potential to build thermal venting down, you know, drilling down. Instead of drilling for a well, you drill down to a hot spot and use that, you know?
Exactly.
So there's all kinds of potential out there, but as far as what mankind is still doing, they're still building houses out of basically cracker boxes, you know?
And I mentioned that to somebody, I can't remember exactly who, about using devices on your electric furnace to heat your house, to make electricity run your lights, your refrigerator, and this, that, and that. And they said, well, you know, even a Peltier device absorbs some of the energy to make the electricity. Well, duh, you're using it in the house to run your refrigerator, which puts off heat, run your deep freeze, which puts off heat, run your cookstove, which puts off heat. So you're not losing anything. Even if not getting the full BTU effect from electricity that you're actually using in the power grid, it is absorbed to make electricity, but you're using the electricity to run other things and getting the heat off of them. So you're not losing one BTU of heat of the electricity you use, but yet you're gaining other benefits.
Well, right now, the way that we're using electricity is inefficient anyway. If you can measure a field off the side of that electric motor, then it's not running efficient. I mean, you got waste energy out there.
Right.
It's out there and not being used. You could recapture some of that if you wanted to. Actually did a small video about that too. But either way, if we studied everything that we knew, you know, we know that resistance will cause heat in the elements. So, you know, when you put too many electrons through that wire, it builds up friction and gets hot because of the resistance. But you can also get the same heat from vibration. And so if you could send the right frequency through that wire, you could literally get that wire to heat up because it would vibrate. I had a little small electric motor that I made, a little electric generator that I made, and I was lighting up little light bulbs with it. They were smaller elements, probably 7 watts. But either way, because the frequency was so high in that little generator, it was able to still light up that bulb. However, you couldn't run anything else with it. You couldn't run an electric motor with it because there's not enough current flowing through there.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. But
it is possible.
Oh,
I've seen, it's either Ryan or Terry. I think Terry did it. Maybe both of them did it. But I seen them light up an incandescent light bulb with using Slayer Exciter.
Yes, I saw their videos on that.
And so, you know, there's a solid state circuit right there that does have the capability and could potentially be tuned just like a radio. You know, with some potentiometers in the right place and capacitors and so on and so forth, you could literally get this to be like a radio tuner and tune it to where it would light up. I'd run some tests on a light bulb, just a regular 150-watt light bulb. I put it in a coffee can. I put a meter on it to see how hot it got, and I was expecting it to maybe reach 160, somewhere around about, but it actually hit over 200 degrees, and that's quite a bit coming off of a light bulb.
There you go.
So, the element inside that light bulb is a lot thinner, you know, and if you could get that, instead of having to put 120 volts at 60 hertz into that, if you could get that to do the same job by vibrating that tungsten element inside there and be able to get anywhere close to that same heat, you could build a really super efficient heater. Do you think I'm right or wrong?
I'm not doing it 100% correct. I'm absolutely positive of that.
Well, we know how to build radio tuners, and we know how to build, generators. So if instead that's why I kept talking about to Muddy about this actual flux wind turbine of his. You know, he's got the system down pretty good. I'd like to have one to run tests on that had super fine, like the wire that you was talking about. Super fine wire, as many turns as you could cram in that thing, and you know, compact as possible, because I'm looking to get the highest voltage that I can get.
Right.
And the reason being is, if you think about it, you can't run your appliances over 60 hertz because they'll get hot and burn up.
Right.
All right. Well, there's a higher frequency going on when you wind something like that, and I believe that higher frequency would be enough to light up those heating elements in a heater. If you hit the right one, you're going to get that element to light up. It's going to get hot because you're running it above what it's normally. You're not getting, like I said, you're not getting all the current watts and amps like you'd normally get for running off of the regular power grid. However, you're still vibrating that tungsten element and causing it to heat up. What do you think?
I think you're right, because another thing I've never done, voltage is really easy to make.
Yeah. Right. You can get high voltage easy. That's the easy part. Now, getting all the current flow that you need in order to run the inefficient, look how these motors are designed, you know. If you took that same electric motor, you could literally wind it to run off of high voltage. Because, you know, the coils in there right now, they're inefficient as heck.
Exactly.
They just have to match, is all they have to do.
Right.
And as far as the magnetic field inside there, the magnetic field doesn't have to extend out past the motor. Anything past the field itself, you know, all you got to do is have them two magnets get in contact with each other enough for that force to repel it. It don't have to be 3 feet outside the electric motor.
Right.
So tune it back. I mean, proof of that is, over here we're running at 60 hertz and overseas they're running it at 50 hertz. So why are they running theirs at 50 and we're running ours at 60? You know, we're cranking ours up for a reason. Maybe we're energy hugs. I don't know.
Well, that's a normal fact. Everybody out there knows that. Everybody's an energy hug.
Well, I think that, you know, the way that the system's set up, you know, planned obsolescence and so on and so forth, if you know that this light bulb could run at 50 hertz and be just as efficient, but you've got your power on 60, you know eventually it's going to burn that light bulb out.
Right.
You know, and I've got an Edison bulb, a real Edison bulb, that still works to this very day. Now, I can go out to Walmart or one of the stores out there and buy a light bulb and plug it in, and maybe the first or second time I even turn that doggone thing on, blow it out. You know, I was replacing light bulbs hand over fist because they just didn't seem to last very long.
Right.
You know, you turn them off, turn them on, turn them off, turn them on all day long, and that sudden surge in there burns it out because those elements in there are, I believe, mathematically precise to do just that, to burn up.
Oh, yeah, it makes more money that way.
Yeah, back in the day when Edison and them was making bulbs, they didn't have the precision tools to bring that tungsten element down to a certain thickness so that, you know, they just had the tungsten element.
Right.
And so they couldn't make it to where it would deliberately burn up. So here I got an Edison bulb that's probably 100 years old and it still works.
Yep.
You know?
Well, you know, every manufacturer nowadays, I believe they have engineers that design and try to improve their product. And nobody knows how many times some engineer comes up and says, well, I wish you do this, this, and this, and this thing will last 50 years. Well, so the CEOs all get together and say, well, look here, we can't have that because our competition, their product only lasts 15 years. We don't want ours to last 50, we just want ours to last 20 so that the people will buy ours, but we want it to wear out. And that's the way they produce things nowadays.
Yeah, that's a shame.
Last. They don't want it to last.
So if all these folks are really seriously interested in saving the environment, now don't you think that they would want to try to, if they can make something last for 100 years, make it instead of making something that they're going to have to make millions more of and, you know, basically pollute the environment in the process?
Right. You know, the thing is about the alternator that Scott Brown works on.
Yeah.
The thing is, those generators or alternators don't wear out. The bearings in them get old,
yeah.
But the generator itself, the electrical production part, does not wear out. Now, if you treat it wrong, if you turn it too much, too fast, and hook too big of a load, you can burn it up. But there are ways to guard against that. So, consequently, those things don't wear out.
Yeah.
The problem. And they get a little bit of oil grease down in, and once every 25 or 30 years, change out a $2.29 bearing. I mean, you know, but nobody wants to go into manufacturing this thing on a big scale because once everybody's got one, then you can't sell it anymore.
Well, that's the key.
It's something that retired people, like you, me, they'll try to do these things to set up a business and have people donate money. They get the first products because we're not interested in making money. We're interested in helping people.
Yep.
Helping the environment. I don't care about making any more money. I mean, I wouldn't mind if I had a little bit more money, but I've had enough to survive on. What I want to do is spend the rest of my life with a little bit I've got left doing good things for the world.
Well, have you seen Russ's video here recently from RWG Research?
No, I haven't.
Well, he basically made his own magnets. You can literally print onto a blank magnet the North and South Poles wherever you want them.
Really?
And to me, you know, that's some really good technology. I'm sure that at some point in time, somebody's going to say, well, that's not safe, so we can't be doing that, you know. They're going to figure out some reason to tell them no, because if you can control the magnetic field, you can build a generator that won't have the cogging effect like, you know, other generators do and such. And the magnetic motors that everybody keeps talking about would literally function because you could actually control where that field was at any given time. I also put in the Shazoo's chat room, you'd have to scroll up because I did it yesterday and there's been some comments since, but I put a couple videos in there. One was a Van de Graaff generator, and one was a cyclotron.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and essentially it's using high voltage to spin a couple balls around in a circle inside a bowl, but either way, that technology, the Van de Graaff technology, the Wimshurst technology is technology that you can build up a massive static charge, and they've got capacitors that you can build, Leyden jar style capacitors that'll literally kill you, man.
Yeah.
And not that we want anybody to die, but it proves the point that you can get high voltage really super simple, you know. And as far as the whole back EMF, you don't even have to worry about the back EMF anymore because it's not working it in the conventional senses of an electric generator or electric motor. You know, there's no, you got a spark gap that you're jumping across there.
Right.
And you could do the same exact thing if you had an actual flex wind turbine like Muddy builds, and instead of having it connected directly to the load, you actually have it arc across. You can try this. You can find any electrical appliance, and when you plug that thing in, if one of those terminals hits before the other one and you look real close, you'll see a little arc across there because that energy will literally leap across the gap before you ever even get it completely plugged in. And so that tells me that you could spark gap just about any appliance and be able to run off of that without having that back EMF, because it's gonna want to come across to make that connection, but it's gonna be doing that repeatedly, and so there'll be mathematically, I don't know how less of a second that it'd be, but just a brief instance where it shuts off. You know, it's not running a continuous load, so the electrons don't have a chance to go back into the motor and start bogging it down like on a generator whenever you flip the light on. You see what I'm saying?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do.
So, with that said, you could use a capacitor bank. You could actually charge up a capacitor bank using the energy from the power grid if you wanted. A huge capacitor bank. And then you could use that capacitor bank to shoot across to a spark gap to another one and then put it under a load. That way you're not getting that back EMF that you would normally get, because it's not a continuous cycle of electrons going back through there, so the field doesn't have the opportunity to start getting stronger and slowing down that armature.
And you know, really and truly, capacitors, large capacitors, are not difficult to build.
No, they're pretty doggone easy. You know, it's basically because
how easy it is to build a large capacitor. Very large.
And, you know, oil-filled capacitors. And there's so many different ways that you could actually build homemade capacitors. They're just mind-boggling. But
They're
not even that expensive anymore. If you go out and do a little salvaging, you can get them out of microwaves and everything else under the sun and just make you a massive battery or capacitor bank. But
a roll of paper towels and a roll of aluminum foil, and you can build one heck of a capacitor.
Yep.
And then you could do it in less than half a day.
And you know, either way.
Now I'm doing it by hand, not by machine. A machine? Oh my God!
If you need a lot of current watts and amps to run an appliance, from, let's say you start from your generator. Now you can use a capacitor like a battery. It's been proven. I mean, they use boost caps to start cars with, for Pete's sake.
Yeah.
All right. Well, they actually took and made a battery bank, a replacement battery bank, and 2 pounds as opposed to about 20 pounds that the battery would have weighed was enough to start a 4-cylinder engine. And it was 6 boost caps. little capacitors, super capacitors.
I'll be doggone.
And there's a video on YouTube about it. Just Google boost caps and you'll find it. But either way, and you can do it on a smaller scale. You can charge up a capacitor and you can run an LED until that capacitor finally runs down, and you'll see that it runs just like a battery. So if you think about how big your battery bank's going to be, and then run off that capacitor bank. But coming from your energy source, which would be your generator, instead of having it a direct connection to that generator, you have that generator shooting a spark across to that capacitor, that first one in line, and it will charge that capacitor. I've done it for years over there on my Tesla coils. You know, I got one video out there called Shaziz Coil, and there's like four spark gaps on there, and there's two 800 microfarad capacitors on that thing. And when those things fully charge up, they'll blow your hand off. You got to be careful with them things. They're not safe. You know, you never want to touch them if they're not discharged. But either way, that's a lot of power. You know, they use capacitors in like compressor motors, like for refrigerators or air conditioners for a purpose. They use those for that initial punch to get that the compressor to turn over with the power that's coming in. And so, you know, that's why they got the capacitors in there.
Yeah.
And those capacitors and them old air compressors, you got to be careful. Even if the thing's been unplugged for a while, it could still be charged.
You know, that part of that, making sure that the capacitor is discharged, or otherwise if you touch it, it can knock the heck out of you.
Yeah.
Mine would be a cute little funny thing that happened to me back years ago when I had my ranch in East Texas. And I bought a new cattle prod, and I had this young teenage kid that was helping me with the cattle, and I handed it to him, and he pulled the trigger and you know, hit something on there that would conduct electricity and watch it pop and you know, spark fly. Oh, this thing would shoot up a spark across about a 4-inch gap. Well, no, it was about a 2.5-3-inch gap. So he pulls the trigger, and anyway, walks over and he says, "Hey," and he stuck it right to my knee. Well, he didn't have, and I mean, it popped me hard.
Dang.
It was a full cattle prod. I mean, this would put a 1,200-pound steer on his knees. I'm serious. And, I mean, it knocked me for a loop. And, oh, God, he grabbed me with tears in his eyes. I mean, running down his cheek. "I'm sorry, son. I didn't know. I didn't have my hand on the trigger. I said, "Son, when you pull the trigger, you load the capacitor. You don't have to pull the trigger. You pull the trigger and just hold the nail thing. Then you stick it to something. You don't have to pull the trigger and hold it while you're sticking it to something." Dang, I had to explain to him how the capacitor worked, but it was funny as heck because I understand electricity, I understand cattle prods and crowd control things police use. You know, you see people all the time, they get hit, they say they're hollering and hollering, and I mean, they only get hit one time. The man that designed it and built it and convinced the police to use it would go out and give demonstrations and take his shirt off and lift and hit him in the back, and it would knock him to his knees. But he'd get right up and just start talking like nothing happened, because it didn't. It's only for that one split microsecond. That's what pain is. Now, if they hit you with that thing and hold the trigger, you're in deep trouble.
Yeah, you probably start smoking.
And then touch it and throws that trigger. There's no more pain. It's any pain after that is nothing but shadow memory. It's memory pain, not the real thing.
Well, yeah. You know, so that example that you just gave shows the power of capacitors, because that's exactly what's going on inside them cattle prods, is their capacitors. They build up a massive charge and they come with a punch.
A heck of a punch, let me tell you.
And so...
It hurt. Oh, good golly, day! It hurt worse than anything. I'd rather get hit. I'd rather put a piece of 3/4-inch powder on my chest and let somebody hit me with a sledgehammer, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it hurts, but only for that split second. And there is no physical residual pain. Any pain after the current is released is nothing but memory.
Yeah. Well, that whole deal on the Windhurst and the Van de Graaff and what I was talking about, the build an axial flux wind turbine with super fine wire and as many turns as you could get it to get it the voltage as high. I know that you could build a generator that would charge those capacitors up on demand.
You know, when you're talking about the Windverse and static electricity and so forth.
Yeah.
I just bought a new goose down jacket. It has a nylon outer coating.
Yeah.
And I mean, every time I get out of my pickup truck and touch that door, it knocks the daylights out of my fingers. I mean, it almost makes me numb. But you take a lot of voltage to do that. And all it is me just stepping out of the truck and my jacket rubbing across the seat of my truck.
Yeah. And the atmospheric group.
Voltage is so easy to make. It's unbelievable. So if we could, like you're trying to do, if we learn how to use high voltage, high frequency voltage, and lessen our amperage production, or need, which, you know, they go hand in hand. But at the same time, if we could learn how to use high voltage, we wouldn't have to make so much current.
Yeah. And you don't need the current until a certain point. Until you're actually putting it under load, you don't need it to a certain point. And so that's where I've been saying that if you could get the high voltage on demand to charge the capacitors up at a rapid enough rate, and they do have capacitors now that have charge and discharge rates that are basically amazing. And so with that said, there's a lot of punch power inside a capacitor, and if you could get that thing designed just right, you could literally have a generator that wouldn't have the back EMF problem. It would be charging up enough power to, when one coil on one side was being pulsed, the one on the other side was being charged, and they would pulse in sequence, and you could run that doggone thing off of capacitors alone.
Right.
And the proof of that is if you go over to, I think it's rimstar.org, he's got a motor out there that he just 3D printed. And this thing is amazing. It runs. I'll have to find the link to it. Let me see if I can look that up there. It's got to be in my history on my YouTube there. But anyway, it's almost put up the way I'm talking about. It's more like a pulse motor, but it doesn't take nearly as much as what your average electric motor would take to run. And so I know that you could, if you design these electric motors from the get-go and generator heads from the get-go efficiently, then you could get some. We're not trying to get out more than we're trying to put in. That's not what free energy is.
It's
moving what's already there from one point to the next. The atmospheric group, they put a couple 200-foot poles up in the air, and those 200-foot poles, they had a wire stretched across there with some nanocarbon on there, and they're pulling 2,000 volts of electricity out of the air. You know, there's a calculation out there per foot that you get off the ground how much the voltage is where.
Yeah.
And I don't know where exactly that is, but best one to talk to probably Coltis on that, because he was doing the atmospheric motor, and he got the general idea how many feet has to be up in the air before, you know, it gets so many volts down there. But either way, they're not doing anything. The wire is just sitting there. It's picking a static charge up out of the air. It's going down, and it's charging up. By the time it's all said and done, they end up with 9,000 volt capacitor banks. Now, you can do a lot with 9,000 volts.
Who was it that made the video and put it on? I think he's one of the guys at the round table. Made a video, he flew a kite like 300 feet in the air, and it was really fine copper wire, and he was getting so much electricity, he touched the wire and instantly burnt a blister on his fingers.
Well, it don't surprise me then. I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on up there. I mean, look at lightning. How many volts do you think's in lightning?
Oh, man, a lot.
Yeah, well, Tesla showed people how to harness lightning if they'd pay attention long enough.
Yeah.
You know, we got this system, this raggedy old power grid system that we've got going on here, and it's inefficient as heck. We're wasting energy out the eyeball. They're hollering about the so-called global warming, and yet we're still not using any of these technologies, and we're still not building our electric motors to be fully efficient as they could be.
No, we are not.
And we could literally tap into energy around us without ever even harming nature, without ever even affecting anything, and still be able to be warm and cool when we need to be cool, and have our refrigerators running and so on and so forth. It's more than possible. You don't have to take a nuclear material and boil water. I mean, that's all a doggone nuclear power plant is a big boiler system.
Exactly. It's a furnace.
Yeah. Once it goes awry, then you got all that waste that's still trying to decay, and, you know, there you go. You got a couple billion x-rays in a matter of a short period of time.
Really? Yeah. What do you do with all the waste fuel?
Well, if it was used right from the get-go, instead of actually using it to boil water, which eventually is going to create some sort of waste product, because now you've got radioactive decay in water, and so it's going to basically cause the water to be radioactive. I mean, it's common sense. If it decays in water, it's going to what is it? Uranium that's in the ground. It's natural radiation, you know. It's naturally radioactive. When that decays, it releases energy. So why couldn't you take and recover that natural energy, just like when you see Muddy talking about whenever you take and I've done it in a couple of videos, you take a coil of wire and you put an LED on that thing, and you hold it anywhere near the right frequency, and it will light up that light bulb. So, you know, there's energy going through there.
You know, I wondered, whatever happened to the hydrogen chlorine engine that the guy designed in Florida back in the late 50s, early 60s, that ran on hydrogen and chlorine saturated with light energy, and the light from a flashlight bulb, the incandescent flashlight bulb, would power the engine. They ran the motor on their final test that was ever publicized. They ran it for 7 days. It was 24 hours and 40 minutes per day. They stopped it 20 minutes every 24 hours to change the oil in the motor. At the end of 7 days, they measured the chlorine and the hydrogen, and they had not lost one cubic millimeter of fuel. The light energy does not have to be physical light energy. This thing would run on, you know, the string pins with the little bitty plastic heads?
Yeah.
You could take waste fuel from a nuclear power plant, half that size would power the boat. Think about that.
Well, like I said,
besides all that, it was in Popular Mechanics back in the late 50s, early 60s. And then you've never heard another word about it again to this day.
And that's usually the way it works out. I found that link, and I also put it in the Mad Science Room. I'll go ahead and put it in here in the chat where you're at, too. But this is rimstar.org, I think, is the one that did this one here. Anyway, it's a really super efficient motor for its size. I mean, it's just amazing. It's a little pulse motor, but you just have to look at it and think past just the motor itself, the potential. I mean, anything could be made on any scale, could be scaled up or scaled down. And a few modifications to this thing right here. He said that it's not perpetual motion, all right? But if you look at it, it is a super efficient electric motor / generator. And, you know, it's about the size of his hand. But it's not beyond the realms of possibility to take that idea and run with it and build a large version that would literally run your doggone house.
Right.
You know, there's all kinds of ideas out there, like the Bedini motor and so on and so forth, that you've been hearing about all these years, all these different magnet motors and stuff like that. Some of them had some problems, such as the cogging effect in the magnet motor, where you had to be able to get around that. But where there's a will, there's a way. Now, I'm trying to bypass all those hardships that would come around from all the different flaws in the system, and instead of using the energy from the gate and getting the back EMF, I'm actually talking about generating as massive high voltage as I can ahead of time, using that to charge a capacitor bank real time, and being able to use that power as if it was plugged directly in. You see where I'm coming from? You still there, Raymond, or did I lose you?
No, my phone went off. I've got a crew working in Granbury, Texas, down where Scott lives.
Yeah.
They're getting ready to go to Home Depot to buy some material. They're going to have to call me, and so I can give them the numbers over the telephone.
All right, well, let's say we take a music break, refresh the coffee and all that kind of stuff there, and come back and finish up.
Phone's going off again.
All right. Oh, we'll be back, folks. Stay tuned. You're listening to Shaziz Mad Science, Raymond and myself, and we'll be back in a few.
To the place.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there, telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop. Children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speaking their minds are getting so much resistance from behind. Every time we stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. What a field day for the heat. A thousand people in the street, singing songs and a carrying signs. Mostly say hooray for our sides. It's time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Strikes deep into your life, it will creep. It starts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, the man come and take you away. We better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. We better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. We better stop. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. We better stop. Children, what's that sound?
Hello, everybody. We're back. You're listening to Mad Science. I got my buddy Raymond over here, and we had a good conversation off the deal. You were talking about that bird there, the little toy that they used to have that goes up and down. You want to tell people how that thing works again?
It's called the dunking bird or the drinking bird, and all it is you have a container of a liquid that evaporates at very low temperatures, and your pipe goes down through your bottom bowl and into your liquid. Now, as the liquid evaporates, it builds a pressure above it, pushes the liquid up the pipe to where there is another bowl, and it pressurizes the liquid in the upper bowl. I mean, not the liquid, but the vapor in the upper bowl. And when you pressurize something, you compact the heat. Well, the head is covered with felt with a little bit of water on it, and this rocking back and forth lowers the temperature. It actually draws the heat out of the vapors in the head, causing it to be not a vacuum, but a lesser pressure than in the bottom. So if you decrease the pressure in the top, then the pressure in the bottom is greater. It pushes down on the liquid, making the liquid go up the tube. Well, once it, so much liquid gets up the tube, your actual balance point, it gets heavier, so it rocks over and touches a little bit of water, and you lock it up just enough to where the liquid in the top can run down the tube, and then the higher pressure vapors can go up the tube, replacing the liquid, and then, of course, the bottom gets heavy again, and it starts rocking.
Yep. But
touch the water, and it does not take a lot of water. It will not take a lot of water, because as it rocks back and forth, it evaporates, drying the heat.
And we also mentioned about the fact that it doesn't take a lot of torque or RPMs and actually to run a Van de Graaff or a Wimshurst generator. And so you could literally hook a system like what you're talking about to a system like that to where, you know, it's a heat exchanger that's actually causing the action to go back and forth.
A large ducking bird would be the absolute most perfect source of energy I could possibly think of to run a Van de Graaff or a Wimshurst generator. Because it runs 24 hours a day. It runs with or without sunlight.
Well, if you took and you factored in everything that we know about all the different devices out there, the Van de Graaff, the Wimshurst, the static motor, the ionic motor, the plasma technology, the doggone Slayer exciter, the Tesla coil, and this motor that that Renstar.org has put together here, you could build the perfect generator.
Yes.
Literally.
We have the knowledge. We have the techniques. We have the technology. We have everything we need. All we need to do is just put it together.
Well,
I don't have to anybody to invent anything new. Just come up with this, we'll work with that, and that over there will make it even better over here, and put it together and make this thing. That's all it takes. We've got the knowledge.
That's what I'm saying. So, you know, if anybody's out there listening and has access to a machine shop and somebody who could actually put everybody together, keep everybody together long enough to use bits and pieces of the whole deal, I just start pointing out, look, take this piece and that piece and that piece, humor me long enough to build the doggone generator, and you'll see that it works.
Yep.
I know it's possible. I mean, I sit here and watch this little pulse motor that when you get an opportunity, watch that video. I sent it in the Shaziz Radio chat room, and I sent it in to the Awake Radio chat room, and also sent it to over to the other radio networks in their chat there on Skype and in the Mad Science room so people could take a peek at it.
You said something earlier about, in fact, it was off the air. Believe you said something about somebody was driving a Wimshurst or a Van de Graaff generator using a pulley system and weights falling. That tells you exactly how much, many foot pounds energy you need to put into one.
Yeah.
And so, take somebody's experiment like that and use it for your own knowledge to use. For example, me, I'm trying to build a ducking bird, but I need to know how much energy does this ducking bird need to be put out. Because it will run 24 hours a day. And if I can build it to put out the energy, say, for example, if he's got 5 pounds falling 1 foot every minute, then a ducking bird that would produce, say, for example, 2 pounds of force for 1 foot, you know, every so many seconds, then you've got the same energy. Everything has to match.
Yeah. Well, you know, I've been saying this forever today. If you look at some of the old toys from the old days, such as we talked about the pop-pop boat, and you're talking about the Duncan Bird, that's some science in there. And I had people argue with me over the fact that you couldn't scale this up. You know, it wouldn't work. The math doesn't add up. But it did work, because I made a really junky version of it, and it only had 2 turns on a coil, but yet the boat still moved. And so, refined, you could literally build a full-size boat with absolutely no moving parts. All it would be literally a heat exchanger. That's it, you know?
Yes, exactly.
And if you want to get high tech with it and get fast, I mean, there's all kinds of nozzle technology that using jet skis that you could incorporate with it. You wouldn't even have to have a rudder on it. You could just steer the stream around.
Exactly. And some jet boats actually do that. Yep. The jet nozzle is on a swivel, and your steering wheel turns the jet stream. You don't need a rudder. A rudder is just excess drag.
You know, I wish there was a centralized place somewhere where I could get a whole bunch of like-minded individuals who just wanted to just build it, you know?
Yeah.
And once it was built, put the plans out so fast and furious, nobody'd have a chance to buy it out or steal it or whatever, that everybody would know it can be done and they could do it themselves. If they couldn't do it themselves, could pay somebody who could work some machines to build one for them, or we could build them and sell them ourselves. It doesn't matter. The whole key is that it would benefit the entire world, you know.
Well, you could build a static generator, Vandegrift or Wimhurst?
No, I never get around to building Wimhurst. I did a little Lord Kelvin generator, the one where you're dropping the water down through there, but I don't think I ever did a video on that one.
If somebody did a video, and he built one like 3 or 4 foot in diameter.
I'm not sure. I've seen so many videos on Wimhurst and Van de Graaff, but they're, it's a simple concept. It's as simple as what you were talking about with your coat earlier, where, you know, just by the material and rubbing up against stuff, you build up a charge, and there's a... You can try it out. Go get a balloon. Everybody who's listening in, if you're ever around a party or something, get a balloon. Get you an old can of pork and beans or something like that, or anything metal. Set it on the table. Rub that balloon upside your hair and turn the light off, and put that balloon anywhere near that can, and you're going to see an arc come across from that balloon, probably anywhere from quarter inch to an inch long.
Oh Lord, if you got 1 inch long, that would hurt.
Yeah,
that would hurt. I mean, so you're talking 10,000-12,000 volts.
Yeah, sometimes the temperature difference will make a difference in static charge, but everybody's noticed that, you know, like if you got wool blankets and it's middle of the night and you're getting in and out, and you can actually see the little lightning bolts going as you're getting inside that doggone deal, or you walk across the floor and you build up a static charge and you touch somebody and it shocks the crud out of both of you, you can feel it. There's a lot of voltage going on. And there is an equation out there, and I don't know where it is, but it'll tell you how many by inches or whatever, how many volts it takes to jump that far.
Yeah, and humidity will have a large factor on your voltage.
Yeah, but static energy is energy, and it can be stored in capacitor banks.
It can be made very easily. In fact, if you don't think it can be made easily, people... Go outside, just walk around the block, and all of your metal electric light poles by the company, every one of them is grounded, because if they didn't ground it, the air blowing across would build static electricity and put your cotton picking watch pocket to shame. It would stick your thumb in your watch pocket.
Yeah. Like, and, you know, there's the capacitors, like we said earlier, are easy to make. You can make them out of PVC plumbing and aluminum foil. And some of these doggone capacitors will store heavy enough charge that they will kill you. Literally.
Oh, yes. Literally.
And so with that said, there's a whole lot of energy potential there. And if, since we already know that it is super simple to make high voltage, and that should be the route that we're going towards.
Yes.
You know, the systems that we got right now are so inefficient that all of our testing equipment are made to measure waste energy. Look at how an amp meter works. You're not actually connecting an amp meter to it. You just kind of clip it around the wire, and it measures the field of that wire. Am I wrong?
And that's exactly how it does it.
Yeah. Now, if you could get that energy tuned down to where all it needs to do is just be able to interact with the two fields, you wouldn't have no waste energy. The field wouldn't be excessive on the outside of that wire, and you'd still get the same amount of work done.
I'm gonna mute for 1 minute.
All right. So anyway, while he's answering his phone call there, just trying to say that, you know, the way that everybody's going about trying to do the whole system of alternative energy, while they've got a lot of brilliant ideas, but you're trying to adapt to a system that is already, in my mind, deliberately made inefficient. And so if it's inefficient from the get-go, you should try to start redesigning toward be more efficient. For example, why do we have to run our electric motors in our refrigerators and stuff off of 120 volts AC? Why couldn't we redesign it to where it would run off of a 12-volt system AC or whatever? It's just it's a matter of the number of turns of windings, the thickness of the wire to determine how big that field's going to be, how much torque you end up getting. But I've seen some little electric motors that have a extreme amount of torque and only use 6 volts. So, you know, take a look at it. Go look at your cordless drills out there. You know, there's some out there that are 6-volt screwdrivers that you can drive a screw into a 2x4 with. You know, and there's 12 volts to 15 volts to 16 volts and up of cordless drills that they have high enough RPMs to actually drill through stuff, or you can actually set them to where they're actually got enough torque to actually drive a screw into the wall. I mean, they use them on construction sites all the time, so you know the potential's there. It's just a matter of redesigning whatever it is if you want to run off of less energy. It tear apart your average digital alarm clock. It runs off of 9 volts AC inside there. It don't take 120 volts to run that clock, but we're using 120 volts to run it because we have a transformer before we actually get to the part we want to run. So why not redesign it from the get-go to where your house has literally a smart grid? You know, if it only takes 9 volts to run something, then you're only using 9 volts to run it, instead of having a bunch of transformers in every single appliance that you got that are still using energy even after the appliance is shut off, because it still has a primary coil on there and a secondary coil. So when you're putting energy to it, it's still creating a field. You can test this out. I mean, get you an AC voltmeter and go around and a wireless AC tester and check your appliances to see which ones are still producing power. Put it on the transformer like the ones you got on the wall for charging up your cell phone. If you ain't using them, unplug them. That'll save you on your bill. And like your TV that's sitting there, it's on standby waiting with the remote control, it's still using energy. So instead of the entire system shutting off and breaking the circuit from the wall, then it's continuously sitting there waiting for you to push the button on a remote, and it's using energy. That's the way the whole system is. It's convenient. I mean, you don't have to get up and plug anything in. But they do make devices that you can actually remote control turn something off and on. So, you know, with that said, we're using the entire energy system. Our power grids are all being used inefficiently. There is easier ways to do it. There is an easier way to build a generator that would be more efficient. If you combine several technologies together, like the one that I talked about that I just put in there from rimstar.org YouTube channel there, that little motor right there, when I look at that motor, it's basically what I'm talking about. It's super efficient. It doesn't take very much to run that motor, and it runs for a long time on a very little amount of energy. And so if you combine that style of motor right there with all the other technologies we've talked about, like the Van de Graaff generator and the Wimshurst generator and capacitor technology and even plasma technology, you could literally build a generator that would run itself. And I'm probably going to get shot in the foot for saying that, but that's all right. It's a fact. You know, we're not trying to get out more than we're putting in. We're not looking for 0 point or over unity. All we're doing is trying to figure out a way by which to guide the energy that we need to get physical work done without forcing it down the pipe and without interfering with anything else. We're just guiding it from one side to the next. It's as simple as that. Sounds like you're back, Raymond. I heard the windstorm.
There you go. I didn't turn that off, but it's okay. It's going cold out there.
Yeah, well, I got my heater going in here, too, so this isn't going to be studio quality podcast because there's a heater going in the background, but, hey, I'm staying warm.
Hey, I can't hear your heater.
No, I'm surprised.
Yeah, must be more quiet than mine.
It's probably my loud mouth is drowning it out.
I went out last spring and bought one of those air conditioners, this combination air conditioner heater, and it's 220 volts. And I'm going to tell you something. That thing doesn't do nearly as good a job as a little 1,500-watt bathroom space heater.
Well,
I'm thinking there's certainly something wrong with it. Shaziz, what do you think?
Well, like I said before, they made these doggone things so doggone inefficient, it's just crazy.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
For example, a lot of these little space heaters have little coil systems in there, little coils of elements, tungsten elements inside there. I don't know if they're tungsten or not. I can't remember. I have to take a look. But either way, you got the heating element going on. You said earlier about putting the coil inside of a box instead of having it directly blown on by the heater. So whenever you plug that in and it gets red hot and then the fan kicks on, you notice that the brightness of the red goes down because you're now cooling it down really fast. Well, those ceramic heaters out there are probably a little bit better because it actually heats up that ceramic and then blows the air across the ceramic. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly. And built-in devices or thermal couples are made with ceramics.
Yeah.
So just cover that metal box with ceramics, with those thermal couples, and let the heat go through them where you cool them on the outside. They make electricity, and the heat that comes out of the thermal couple goes into your house to heat your house.
Yeah,
the electricity goes into your refrigerator and your freezer and your cook stove, so that you can keep your food fresh and cook your food and heat your house all at the same time. I mean, it's so much more efficient. It is unreal. It is unbelievable. And you can do the same thing with your air conditioning system. Your air conditioning system does not make cold air. It removes the heat from the air and puts it outside. Well, you can take that heat and run it through a thermocouple and make electricity and feed the electricity right back into your air conditioning system. It won't run it, but it sure will lessen its needs, make it more efficient.
Well, and that's another key that I was talking about there, too. You know, if you have some sort of recovery device that you sit there and as you're running it, you're capturing waste energy off of it and pumping it back in there, it doesn't have to work near as hard in order to be able to function.
Exactly.
So you could either waste a bunch of electricity while running it or recover some of that wasted electricity and run it for less.
Exactly.
Because if it doesn't have to work as hard, then it ain't going to be drawing as much voltage or watts, currents, and amps, all that.
One of the things that uses a lot of energy on the air conditioning system is, well, you have to have two fans. One to go across the cold coils to go into the house, to take the hot air in the house, blow it across the cooler coils so that the cooler coils can absorb that heat. Then the pump takes the heat outside in another set of coils with another fan. Well, it would look ridiculous, but you wouldn't need that fan if your coils were 3 or 4 times bigger.
Well, simple science as well is another thing that gets ignored whenever they're building heating and cooling systems for houses. We know that cold air falls, so your cooling should be on the ceiling. We know that hot air rises, so your heat should be on the floor. Now, if your heat and your cooling is going through the same ducts and they're both on the floor, then you're obviously not going to be the best efficient. If you had your AC running on the ceiling, then it's going to be you're going to get the most bang for your buck out of your AC. And if your heat's on the floor, you're going to get the most bang out of your buck for your heating portion of it.
The perfect solution to that is a dual circulation system where you've got ductwork going to every room in the ceiling.
Yep.
every room in the floor. So in the summertime, you reverse your fan.
Yeah.
You blow your cold air through your upper duct and it drops down into your room. In the wintertime, you reverse the fan again and you blow your hot air through the lower duct. And that's all it would take.
Yeah, and you'll definitely reduce your light bill because you won't have that thing won't have to stay on near as long in order to cool your room down.
And think about the cost. It's a one-time cost. When you build the house, one time. You pay one time for that extra duct system. And a reversing fan, it isn't $5 more for a fan that will reverse than it is for one that goes in one direction only.
Well, even if you wanted to use the same fan going the same direction, you could make something as simple as a little flap like they got inside your car that diverts the air off into the upper duct or the lower duct, whichever one you want to use.
Absolutely. It's just that simple, folks.
Yeah.
And you have so much more efficient system that, I mean, the more efficient, the less energy you're going to actually use to get the comfort you want.
Well, in the heating portion of it, like there's a lot of mobile homes that are made, the heating is in the ceiling and it's not in the floor like it should be. The heating and the AC run through the ceiling. And so since you know the heat rises, when that heat blows out, it's only going to be staying up there heating the ceiling. So if you had your chair sitting up there on the ceiling, then you'd be nice and toasty.
Yep.
But since you're down on the floor, you're still cold and you're wondering why your light bill is so high.
Right.
So, yeah, we were also talking about off that we'll have to build that and sell it, man.
There you go.
Yeah. Anyway, there are so many simple solutions to the deal. The average Joe doesn't have the pennies in their pocket to make things like the perfect efficient house. I wish that there was a way that we could have done this together from the get-go. You know.
Think about this a minute. A lot of people, I've seen people build a home and themselves and insulate the walls and this, that, and the other. You need to put R19 in or R30 in the ceiling. Well, I can't afford that. Duh! Did you people out there realize that the R factor of your insulation will pay for itself on commercial retail rates of insulation, will pay for itself in one season?
Yeah, definitely. Think about the doggone heat loss going out the ceiling, man.
Let's just say you've got an R factor of 10 and it's going to cost you 10 cents per square foot. Okay? So you get an R factor of 20, it's going to cost you 20 cents. You get an R factor of 30, it's going to cost you 30 cents. But no matter what, it's still going to pay for itself in energy efficiency in one season. Whether you put in the R10 or the R30 or the R40, it pays for itself in one season. So if you can't afford it today, don't do it until you can afford it.
Well,
put in as much as you can put in.
And then there's another key. They make that really good foam board stuff that you could actually do maybe one room at a time until you got your entire house insulated perfectly. It'd be like a igloo cooler, you know. If it's warm in there, it's going to stay warm.
That poly, I can't think of the other part, but that blue polyurethane insulation that they sell at Home Depot runs $1.25 a square foot. Now that sounds expensive, but it's, like I said, it's a one-time cost.
Yeah.
How do you plan on living in that place? I mean, you want a $500 electric bill, what, just for your heat and cooling alone? Or would you like to have a $200 a month? And it's going to pay for itself.
Well, no, the whole thing, upfront cost, if you're going to be building a house from the get-go, look into that R factor. That's a big deal. If you start thinking about your house scientific before you have a house built, you know heat rises, so you want to put your heater on the floor. You know cold air falls, so you want to put your cooling on the ceiling. There's some really good advice right there. And then if you insulate the heck out of that thing, then your bill's going to be way down there. And if you unplug things that are not being used when you're not using them, then you're saving money as well. So there's many different ways. I mean, insulated windows and so on and so forth. You could make a super inefficient house out of your house, if you wanted to do it just a little bit at a time, it would definitely pay itself off until, like I said, the holy grail of the energy devices are in. We've got the technology, Raymond. It just aggravates me.
Let me correct something. I think you meant to say efficient.
Yeah, efficient.
Right, you said super inefficient.
Yeah, well, right now it's super inefficient. I meant super efficient.
I think everybody out there knew what you meant. Yeah.
Well, my mind races like a billion miles an hour, and I'm thinking about this. It's just so aggravating because to me it's a simple concept. You know, when you're building this stuff, you can go out there and look at any alternative energy device you want to. All right, and you can find as many flaws as you want to, but with that one particular energy device, there's something going on there. You take that anomaly out of that one there, and the anomaly out of the Wimshurst, the Van de Graaff, and static motors and ion motors, and you put it on the table, and you step back and look and say, hey, you know, if I put this one with that one, man, I could not only run my power, but I could also get that to throw some more power back in, and then I could take this heat off of this side over here, use it for a little bit extra energy to put back in, and by the time it's all said and done, with all these different things, all these pieces of the puzzle together, you got the most efficient generating system in the history of time, and you ain't got no waste energy going on, and you ain't got no waste materials coming out of it, such as boiling water with radioactive material. What were they thinking?
You know, I would like to see somebody start a company and build panels to build houses with, just like they do walk-in coolers, where you just stand one panel up and you just reach the little hole with a special key tool and you twist it 90 degrees and it locks the panels in place. Those panels can be made with like hardy board on the outside with some kind of a design on it. You could actually put sheet rock on the inside, so when you lock your house all together, I mean, you've got 4 inches thick of styrofoam. No, you're talking about insulation and it's all in panels. You just lock it together.
Well, here's a crazy idea. You know, there's all kinds of plastic wasted all over the world. We talked about this, islands of it floating all over the planet. Well, if you reground that plastic and even glass itself, they have glass-filled nylon plastics out there that's like super strong, right? Strong as all get out. But imagine taking and filling those insides of those blocks like Legos. You build you like a Lego block, and inside of that you have the highest R factor insulating, whether it be polyurethane or styrofoam inside that thing.
Yes.
And then you snap your house together like Legos, and you put it together the way you want it. Build the shell out of it. That thing would be so super efficient.
And beautiful, because the Lego blocks could actually be two-faced.
Yeah.
It's an outer face.
You wouldn't even have to paint it.
Bacteria won't eat it. It won't rot. Cockroaches don't eat it. Mice don't eat it. They might dig a hole in it and build a nest, but I mean, you could put something in the plastic that would deter them. After all, there was a guy that made a chemical that tastes so bad, nothing on earth, not even bacteria, would eat it. Now, somebody said, well, why would you build something or make a chemical like that? Simple. You put it in plastic that you insulated electric wires with. 30% of all house fires, in fact, all building fires, are caused by rats and cockroaches chewing on the insulation of electric wires. So you put this chemical in the insulation, and no more problem.
Yeah.
Same thing in the plastics that you build these Lego blocks to build houses and buildings with. And trust me, folks, they can make them that plastic so strong you could build a 3-4-story building with this stuff and be more than safe. More than safe.
Well, we have the technology. You know, necessity is the mother of invention. People who live by the river learn how to build their houses on stilts. And so these things actually, when the river floods, they'll begin to float. So the house, the garage, the car, and everything just floats up on the water, and they wait for the water to go down, and they have boats tied to the side of their house so that if they need to leave, that they can jump in the boat and head on down the road, you know, so to speak, to dry land anyway.
Got this recycled plastic, make something out of that, pound for pound, is just as strong as steel, if not maybe a little bit more.
Well, and then you got to factor in as well, there's different shapes, you know, like a sphere, an arch, so on and so forth. There's ways to make even the weakest material super strong.
Exactly. And there's a difference between strength and hardness, like, softness and toughness.
If you're living in the middle of tornado zone and you make you a dome, you know, the wind's going to blow right around you and take the flat house away.
Yes.
So, there's common sense, man, and you could build your house no matter what, whether you had a flood, an earthquake, a typhoon, unless this planet was completely destroyed, and even then, if you had it set up to where whenever the planet was destroyed, you're in your own little flying saucer, so to speak.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
Well,
think alike, don't they?
We have everything to do it.
Yes, it does.
And all you'd have to do is wait for the planet to blow up and just kind of float out into space and hope for the best. You know? Have your own little greenhouse going on, you know? You know, it's not beyond the realms of possibility. I'm just saying, you know, here we are in the year 2015. We've had technology all these years to keep people alive and safe and fed and roofed over their head and everything warm and cool when they need to be. And here we are, we're still building our house out of sticks, we're still building inefficient power grid systems, we're still basically, all we're doing is paying people to basically rip us off. That's it. You know, our supposed representatives out there, the one that charge you carbon tax, you breathe out carbon, so you're paying to breathe, literally. And they want to make it illegal for you to live off the grid, because if you're off the grid, you're not paying taxes on their electricity. They want to make it where you have to pay taxes on whether or not you're collecting sunlight or water or whatever. Anything that you do to make yourself self-sufficient, they want to tax. And with that said, that ought to be a red flag right there, because I've never gotten a light bill from the sun, all right? And I've never gotten a cooling bill from the wind or the winter or snow or whatever, you know.
I cannot perceive or comprehend why even big people with money would even attempt to stop people from getting off the grid, because way less than 5% even have the capability of getting off the grid.
Well, they're afraid that it's catching on, because alternative media and alternative science and alternative energy and all that kind of stuff, it's catching on, because people are tired of paying all this money. You know, they're tired of being ripped off.
But look at the people living in condominiums, apartments, high-rise apartment buildings. There's millions of people that, even if they had the money and the technology, still wouldn't have the room to do it, the place to do it.
Well, I'll tell you what, if I was a millionaire, the first thing I would do is get myself completely off the grid, completely self-contained in a house that I would dare anybody to try to smash besides God. I wouldn't say that to God like they did with the Titanic. Not even God could sink this boat. Wrong. But I would make it to where your average thunderstorm, tornado, flood, whatever, tidal wave, whatever came my way, I was ready for it. My boat would float, you know what I mean?
There you go. Build a floating house and put it on dry land.
Yeah, don't try to tell God he ain't gonna be able to smash it, because he'll throw a big rock from space and put a hole in it.
Hope for the best and build for the worst.
Yeah.
There you go.
But either way, my light bill wouldn't be nothing. My water bill wouldn't be nothing. I mean, there's somebody that was talking about in a YouTube video I seen skimmed across yesterday. They were talking about figuring out ways to make the ocean water potable. What are they talking about? I mean, go over there to Dubai. That's where they get all their water. They actually built the majority of the land that they got skyscrapers on. They pump water. They got huge desalination plants. And they probably sell the crud out of sea salt.
Yeah.
Now, you tell me that ain't ingenuity, man.
But what was that again?
Over in Dubai, there was some, somebody did a YouTube video talking about trying to figure out a way that we could use the ocean's water for pure water, because you know, all the fracking and all the other stuff, people polluting the water, and we need water to drink and so on and so forth.
You know what, where the Azores are? The Azores are a bunch of little islands, right, almost right dead out in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean, and they have no fresh water. I mean, you can drill as deep as you want, you can hit no fresh water on those islands. And yet, those people have lived on those islands for a couple hundred years, and they raise animals and everything, and they get their water strictly from rainwater. Of course, if you're a little bitty island out in the ocean, you're going to get a lot of rain. You know, it rains like crazy in the ocean.
Well, even at that, even if it never rained and the oceans were still there, if they can do it in Dubai, we can do it anywhere else.
Exactly.
So the Earth is 3/4 covered in water. We're not in danger of running out of water anytime soon. And if the Earth gets so hot that it all boils away, then we're doomed anyway. So you might as well not even worry about getting a drink of water.
The only danger of water is drinking water in large area cities and so forth. But there again, like you just said, there are ways to do it.
There is filtration technology out there that'll take it down to the smallest micron and clean the water. They got straws that you can stick down in the creek, and dirty old creek, and drink right out of mud puddle and drink right out of it. So, you know, the technology's there. You know, if you're gonna sit around and holler about polluting up the world, then first thing you need to do is start cleaning your own backyard. And if you're worried about the so-called global warming scam, then the first thing you need to do is get your house to be totally energy efficient. And if you're worried about all the other doomsday scenarios in the world, and you should be building yourself a totally self-contained biosphere that will be weatherproof in all directions, whether it be heat, cold, snow, water, wind, whatever. You have all the tools, you have all the technology, we have all the materials. We got exotic materials of epic proportions. You know, you pipe your sunlight in if you have to. So there you go, you got lighting and everything. Well, Raymond, we're down to the wire there, brother. You still there? Did I lose you? I think I lost him. Maybe his phone rang again.
No, my wife's here. Yeah, she's talking to her mother down in Mexico.
All right, well, we got like 2 minutes left, so if you got anything you want to say real quick, and then I'll play us up out of here with a couple crazies, and we'll...
Yes, I do. Folks, I said it earlier on the show, I'll say it again, my way of signing off. Knowledge shall set you free. Don't listen to a bunch of hype about global warming. Global warming exists, it's real, it's going to warm up, but we're talking average temperature worldwide. Climate's going to change. Yes, it will. Knowledge will set you free.
Yep. Go watch my video, Earth Tilted.
That's shit.
Do you hear me, Raymond?
Yes.
Go watch my video, Earth Tilted.
Yes.
And tell me if I was wrong. Anyway, we're down to the wire there. So with that said, everybody, you've been listening to Shaziz Mad Science. I hope you join us for the Knights of the Round Table tomorrow. And same time, 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. Central Time. So it's actually an hour longer tomorrow. But either way, peace and love to everybody. Stay tuned. Us Mad Science guys are going to be out working on all the alternative energy devices and sending that information your way for free. Peace and love, everybody. Take care.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap. Ah! Ah!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
Aw, crap.